Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell, and they call me the Trainer of Champions. And on the radio right now, our radio aficionado, world famous Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Yes, indeed. So far, so good with the snowstorm. But, hey, it is January. looking for some snow, but that doesn't stop us from going on the radio with some boxing news. And a lot of news, too, to get to. Man, busy little weekend here, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff happening. Yeah, so go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of boxing going on around the world, but what do we got?
Hey, first of all, I want to just comment on last week's fight that was on Fox TV on Sunday. Caleb Plant, everybody was talking about that fight this week against Iskra Tagee, who won the title. And what we're looking at was 917,000 people, the viewers. So it had peaked at 986,000. It's not quite a million, but still it was a lot more than the first try they had a few weeks ago. So Fox getting into the boxing game and pulling some numbers there, too. And we have a lot of other things to get to as far as some of the other news around the world. But let's get into what's happening. Of course, the big night tonight at the MGM Grand, Las Vegas, Nevada, in USA, where eight-time champion Manny Pacquiao, 60 wins, 70 losses, 2 draws, 39 knockouts, defending his WBA World Welterweight title against Adrian the Problem Broner. 33-3-1, and yeah, he's been a problem.
yeah, you got that right. You know,
you got his name right, man.
But Bob, you know, it's real troubling to see a young man who was a good amateur, and you know, he's from over the Rhine in Cincinnati, which is a real troubled community. You know, the guy works hard. Gets into programs to stay away from a lot of things when he's an amateur. And he waits till the moments when he starts making money to start getting in all of this trouble and calling all of this chaos. And, you know, what happened between him and Al Bernstein, you know, it's not that ain't the platform for that. You know, why wait till a guy grabs the mic and he gets ready to talk? If you're a real man, you're sitting right beside him. If you got a problem with him, he's around the scene, the venue where the fights are. You walk up to him, say, "Look, I want to talk to you. If you mind stepping over here to the side," and look him dead in the eye. And tell him face to face, behind the scenes, it carries more impact. What that does, it just puts another black eye, from my view, from sitting on a professionalism. You know, it's about handling fear. You know, a lot of people handle fear in different ways. But when a guy handles fear in that manner, you know, fear to fight or fear to flight, and you're on a public forum where he asks them a real personal question. And that question was about how does this turn the page in your career fighting a legend like Manny Pacquiao. You know, he may like him or dislike him. Manny Pacquiao is the sale. You know, he's
right.
The big time. $10 million, you know, him and Floyd Mayweather.
Another 10 will probably even get. We'll end up with $20 million by the time it's all done, yeah.
With the back end of the deal. And
yeah.
there's no reason for a young man like that, you know, Al Bernstein, a legend and things like that, who's been a real advocate to the game. When he asks you a genuine question, you know, people expect a genuine answer. And this is a turning point in his career. You know, to be fighting on this level, on the pay-per-view level, a legend. Because if he goes heads up by himself on pay-per-view, he wouldn't even bring flies to the dump. So,
right.
You know, you have to look at that. And it just puts – it's real sad, man. And I like Adrian Bonner. You know what I mean? I don't see where he got the, you know, trying to be the bad guy. And the bad guy really don't sell. That really sticks with you for a lifetime, man. And there's going to reach a point when he gets a little older and a little mature. He's 30 years old. And Manny Pacquiao's 40. But it's going to reach a time where he's going to look back and he's going to say, wow, man. Was I really acting crazy when I really acting real foolish? And then when you're finished with the game, a lot of people don't want to bother with you. You know what I mean?
He's
going to push the buttons with networks. Networks are going to stop wanting him on the TV. And when that happens, bro, when that happens, guess what?
That's the bread and butter goes on, baby. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. The bread stops going in your pocket, man, and it will hurt you. Them networks will shut you down, bro. Shut you down and cut you out. You won't be on the scene or on the screen or nothing. They'll cut you right out. But, Bob, this is going to be a real exciting fight, and Al Bernstein – hit it head on. You know, how does it turn the page? I think it turns the page for both of them. It will show if Manny Pacquiao, if he goes over the heel tonight, or where he see that he still has his things of looks and youthfulness, and will set up the rematch fight that was signed on contract between him and Mayweather. They're saying the media is saying it's a done deal. If he beats Broner, then he goes on to Mayweather and Pacquiao too, you know,
right.
Which
mm-hmm.
is with good numbers. Hey, the numbers that they hit, even
yeah,
half of the numbers,
was, yeah.
Yeah, with 2
right.
million buys, with half the numbers at a different price range, it's still going to make a lot of money. And at this price range, their fight, if it with Broner and Pacquiao, if it does a million buys, it's going to pack in a good number for pay-per-view.
They're even saying they half a million would do, too.
Yeah,
so
half a million would do, too. But, you know, we'll move on to what you said earlier when we opened up about Plant. That was a good fight on Fox.
That's Fox, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was. You could see a young man who fought with a purpose, a reason. You know, he trained hard, trained diligent, and you could see that he was focused on his goal, meaning that this was the prime opportunity for him. You know, sometimes opportunity only come once in a lifetime. And this young man fighting for his daughter, he rose to the occasion grand style and grand fashion. And he fought every round to win, and you could tell it. And at the end of the day, the large margin of victory with a unanimous decision, you can see how diligently he prepared. And hats off to him. And we look to see him on there again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he's the first champ from Tennessee since Tommy Hitman Hearns. So there you go, give it up to Tennessee.
That's very good.
Hey, big undercard. Big undercard on that Showtime pay-per-view tonight, too. We have Rashi Warren, he's 16-2, and Nordine Uba-Ali, he's 14-0, 11 KOs. They fight for the vacant WBC World Bantamweight belt. And this is an Olympic rematch from 2012. Uba-Ali is a Frenchman. And so everybody's looking to see what happens on this one. Badu Jack, he's fighting tonight, 22-1-3, 13 KOs versus Marcus Brown, undefeated at 22-0, 16 knockouts. And that's where he opened WBC silver light heavyweight crown. And one other note, Jacques Tapora, he was 22-0, 17 KOs. He is out tonight. He came in 5 pounds overweight. He's off the card. He was supposed to fight Hugo Ruiz, 38-4, 33 KOs, for the interim WBA world featherweight title. Tapora has been stripped of that title, and Ruiz will now fight Alberto Guevara, 27-3, 12 KOs. in a non-title fight. So there's some news regarding that pay-per-view tonight. Also in the U.S., we have regional favorite Chauncey Weliver, 57 wins, 12 losses, 5 draws, 23 KOs. He battles Michael Birthmark at the Red Lion Hotel in wintry Billings, Montana. And up in Canada, Brampton and Ontario, they host the contest for the vacant NABA lightweight belt when 13-0 Josh O'Reilly steps in with the 17-2-1 Cam O'Connell. Unbeaten lightweight Mohamed Abedin, 10-0-1, clashes with Maximino Cho'ala, 14-7-1 as well. And out in Calgary, it's Candy Wyatt, 7-0, 3 KOs versus Dalila Velasquez, 5-0 with one knockout in the female welterweight feature. An unbeaten male welterweight, Devin Retty, 12-0, crosses the ropes to get at Juan Carlos Pacheco, 15-17. Crossing over to Struer, Denmark, hometown hero Dina Thorsland. She's 12-0, 6 KOs, defends her WBO World Female Super Bantamweight crown against Alicia the Tigress Graf, 29-7, 13 KOs. And the co-main event features featherweights Dennis Salem, 19-2-2, and Jesus Sanchez, 9-1, in a rematch, this time for the vacant EBU European Union featherweight title, once owned by Salem. Jimmy Belzum hosted Gaetan Toma versus David Dalelis light heavyweight feature, and at the casino in Menton, France, the headliner is the female featherweight Nahi Kachi versus Nina Pavlovich contest. Hanover, Germany will highlight welterweight Amin Winter unbeaten at 6-0-1, and Calenzano, Italy has Marco Papasodero meeting Gaetano Buta in the welterweight finale. India checking in. Noida steps into action with the featherweight feature of Sunil Siwas, 3-0-1, versus Dave O'Neill McDellan, 3-1 as its topper there. And heading back over to South America, to Escobar, Buenos Aires, Argentina, with Thai Sports TV, will have the Macarena Ayala Ledesma, 9-0, fight defending her South American female lightweight crown, and looks to capture the Argentina FAB female lightweight crown, currently held by her opponent, Marisa Gabriela Nunez, 8-9-2. In Rufino in Santa Fe State, lightweights Elias Damian Arrojo, 19-1, former WBC Latino champ, and Pablo Ezequiel Rodriguez, 16-11, meet up. And in Villa Ciudad de America in Cordoba, with Eduardo Martin Casal versus Carlos Ivan Cordoza in the super lightweight feature. Santa Cruz de la Sierra in Bolivia has Walter Jesus Roca Rivero, 3-0, taking on the debuting Antonio Velasco in the super welterweight match on a card filled with debuting fighters. Yuri Perez makes his debut against fellow super bantamweight Gonzalo Ramon Garay, the headliner at Fresia, Chile. Out in the Far East, the open OPBF super welterweight title fight between Jung Kyung Lee, 6-2-1, and Samuel Columbine, 25-10-1, occurs in Seoul, South Korea. In Singapore, Aldi Hafiz, 4-0, clashes with Maxime Nahak, 7-16-3 in the super middleweight main event. Tokyo, Japan, highlights the Shingo Waki, 25-5-2, 17 KOs, and Takafumi Nakahima, 29-11-1, super bantamweight battle. Also want to mention the card taking place tomorrow, Sunday, in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, with super welterweight Kanishtin Pulatov, 6-3, with 4 KOs. He's out of Uzbekistan. He'll be featured. And I'm mentioning Ho Chi Minh City because there was a card in that city on Thursday night and also last night. And, you know, with Thailand and Sue Ringvisai on one side, you got Pac-Man and the Philippines on the other side. Vietnam's getting into the action there in Southeast Asia. So that's the first time we mentioned that country, and we'll hopefully continue to mention them. So we're back up to 15 countries going around the world, and that's a good look. But I also want to mention a big fight last night. You have to give it up to Amanda Serrano. She is now a seven-division champion. She won the vacant WBO Super Flyweight World title with a first-round knockout of the bantamweight champion, Eva Vorberger. And now Serrano has won championships at 115, 118, 122, 126, 130, 135, and 140. And she now has a three-fight deal. And one of those fights coming up this summer, we're hoping to see her take on Katie Taylor in a lightweight matchup. So there's some news. We also have some other great news, too. Talk about some of this other stuff. First of all, you know, the Wilder Fury rematch was ordered by the WBC. And if nothing happens, there'll be the purse bid on the 5th of February. And they're talking a 60-40 split. And they say Fury's market value is better than the 70-30 that they usually do. And we're looking at maybe a late May date on that. And meanwhile, there's some shakeup now all throughout the heavyweight division. Dillon White, you know, he was talking about Klitschko this week. Klitschko, was he coming back? Was he coming back? Klitschko said he wasn't. But now White came back and said, yeah, he is. He's got a tune-up fight first, and then he wants to fight me. But meanwhile, White is saying that he's going to take on Dominic Brazil. And White also looking to sign with Frank Warren possibly as early as next week. So Brazil we talked about, too. He's the guy that's kind of the odd man out here because he's the number one WBC mandatory challenger. But, you know, with the Fury fight coming up and the possible Joshua fight, you know, Brazil is just getting pushed back, and so he needs to get busy. So that White versus Brazil fight should be a good one. Also, we heard that Kulev and Robert Helliner, yes, are possible on the Crawford-Khan undercard. And get this one, too. How about this news came out? It's possible we just might see Jarrell Big Baby Miller fight Anthony Joshua coming up in the beginning of June at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Of course, Miller's from Brooklyn. So that's something. And also on the 2nd of March, Luis Ortiz taking on Christian Hammer. So a lot of these heavyweights are starting to match up with each other and seeing how it all shakes out here in the rest of 2019. Also, light heavyweight Dmitry Bivol, he's now with Matchroom, and he's going to take on Joe Smith Jr. And also, we know we mentioned last week, Canelo Alvarez and Daniel Jacobs coming up in May on The Zone. And one other note, too, just want to talk a little bit of history here. Philadelphia's Metropolitan Opera House will be hosting a fight night on February 23rd. It's their first fight since 1954. They just went through a $56 million renovation, and no real matchups yet, but they're saying that it's going to be, of course, heavily filled with Philadelphia fighters. And also we have a couple other notes, you know. Alan, you would have told me about this earlier in the week, Muhammad Ali Airport in Louisville now. They're going to rename the airport, and that's a great thing. And then one other note, former WBA super featherweight and lightweight champion Joey Gamache was cold-cocked on the streets of New York City, got a broken jaw. You know, and of course, Gamache was famous for that fight against Arturo Gatti where Gotti KO'd him and Gamache suffered brain damage. But then he found out later on that Gotti was 19 pounds overweight. So that was always one of those fights that was questionable from the start. So there you go. A lot of busy news.
A lot of busy news, Bob. And we like to say, look, man, boxing is busy and boxing's back. You know, with Anthony Joshua, you know, it's a tough situation, like I said, you know, to sign for the big fights. If you don't move ahead of time fast and furious, you know, these guys, now it's a different age that, you know, where you got Dante Wilder and Fury, you know, they're biting at the bit. So the WBC made it mandatory. They made a mandatory rematch, and that was right after the fight. So they just followed up. Look, you two, you either going to fight or you're going to be stripped. And we'll let somebody else fight off for the belt that wants to follow the rules. So this is very important, man. So, you know, Frank Warren was saying, hey, we might have it. No, but it looks like Fury or whatever. But anyway, they're moving onward and forward, and that's what boxing needs. They need that. But, Bob, without further ado from going to 17 countries around the world, today, our world famous, we have our next guest, and we'd like to say thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. I'm Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, and our world famous radio aficionado, Bob Murray. But we got the former WBA light heavyweight champion of the world and the 2019 and Duck D. Of the Florida Boxing Hall of Fame, Richard Destroyer Hall, brother. Welcome to the show. How you doing, bro?
Yeah. I'm doing good. And thank you very much, man, for you guys to invite me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, and this Destroyer, what does it feel like when they say you're going into the Hall of Fame?
Even right now, it's like it's hard to believe, you know, because I really don't think I've done anything to be in the Hall of Fame, you know. Because it still is like a nerve-wracking to me.
Yeah, well, you come a long way. You're from over there in Jamaica, And as people can tell probably from your accent, don't never let the – you're a real yachty, man. Yeah, you can't let that go. But you were something when you were fighting. You were something to be reckoned with. And for the fans who don't know, man, you went the hard way, man. You left Jamaica all on your own. You got into Florida. Explain that. You know, talk about that beginning, man, that humble beginning.
You see, the beginning, it started ever since I was left on the street when I was a year old, you know. So it's like that right there has put a lot of D and it put a lot of stamp into me where it makes sure that for me, giving up for nothing, you know, because to me, I don't believe I'm fearing anybody. Me, I believe I'm just going forward of everything I do. If I have a broken foot, and I still can hop on one foot, I still got to do what I want, what I said I'm going to do, because my word is my bond. And when I left Jamaica, I was two-time Jamaica national champion with less than with just 10 fights. And I figured I got to get a bigger, a broader opening, because everything was in Jamaica. Jamaica was like a place where, them people just want to hold in me back. So for me, I decided to take a different road by just coming to the United States. And when I first come to the United States, it was very, very hard, very tough, but I hanging in it. And I decided not to give up. And okay, what I throw in front of me, I'm going to remove it because this everything is in my way and I need to get to where I want. And so done. And God bless me. I put good people in my corner like you as my trainer. You're the first one the world championship with. WBL heavyweight championship, and I said, I turned to you and I said, man, what the hell am I going to do with this here? And you said, Richard, this is a way for you to gonna get to where you get going, man. Come on, man, don't be like that.
Yeah, well, when you first came into the United States, you signed with Sugar Ray Leonard.
It wasn't with Sugar Ray Leonard. I signed with the first guy first, and then I get a bad deal, and then a bad rap, and then Sugar Ray Leonard walked into a gym. I was in Fort Lauderdale and training for a fight. I met Sugar Ray Leonard on a Thursday, and I was training to fight on a Sunday. And he walked in, but I was not a fan of Sugar Ray Leonard because I was a big, his idol was Marvin Marvelous Hagler.
That's right.
When Sugar Ray Leonard walked into the gym, I was like, man, I didn't talk to him or anything, you know?
Yeah.
I was in the ring shadow boxing. And everybody stopped doing what they're doing and start talking to him. But then he realized that I'm one of the guys didn't stop to talk to him. He stepped up to the ring and stopped me and asked me my name. And I told him, I said, Richard Hall. And the gate was open from then.
Well, a lot of people don't know, you know, and I'm going to explain this in the best way that I can. You know, you fought Roy Jones, but
yes.
Leading up to that fight, for the fans and the boxing fans around the world, is that there's no excuses. We don't make excuses. We deal with results. However, let me tell you something. With this courage young man, we were training in Florida, and one day in the morning, Richard woke up from bed and said, "Man, look at me, man. I got these things all over me, man." He said, "Snow, what is it? I said, "Man, I don't know. Did you eat something wrong or something? Did you get an allergic reaction?" So we took him to the doctor, Richard. And the doctor explained after the test, they said he can't fight. Richard, he has the chicken pox. Now listen to this.
Oh, wow.
Bob. Richard said, "No, man." He's screaming in the office, "No, man. I have to fight." Richard grabbed me in the office. He said, "Snow, if you tell anybody," he said, I kill you. "You're not going to tell nobody. I'm going to fight this man." He said, "If I got one leg, one arm, one foot, one toe," he said, "I still fight him." He said, "You just find a way that I can do something to get rid of some of this look." He said, "But I'm fighting, man." I said, wow. So that's he said it was, he said it's everything in the life for him to fight for the title. And
it
he meant
dream.
That. Huh?
It wasn't
yeah.
my dream. It
yeah,
was my
you,
dream. That was the dream I had in 1986.
Yeah.
I told my grandmother about the dream, but she told me I was crazy.
Yeah. And we he had to take baths and oatmeal and stuff like that to get rid of some of that. And we trained as much as we could train because most people wouldn't be able to walk out of the bed, man. And he says, "No, get me a plan. Let me go. Let me go, man." And every day, bro, he trained and slept, man. He said, "I'm hurting, Snow, but I got to go." I said, "Come on, Richard." I said, "They're gonna look at me like he crazy." He said, "Snow, I promise you. I promise you, brother. You get me in that fight." He said, "They're gonna have to kill me." He said, "He's gonna have to kill me." I said, "A man with that fortitude, brother." I said, "You going?" I said, "You going?" I said, "And I'm not a dream breaker. I'm a dream maker, and I help people fulfill a dream." And when Richard, a lot of people came in there, bro, Larry Merchant and them on HBO, they said they should stop the fight and all of this, but Richard gave it everything he got, man. Everything. I mean, when you see a man give every total thing that he got, leading up to the fight and in the fight, you say this man is something special when it comes to that. You know, and I thank you, Richard. You know,
I thank you too, man.
Yeah, man.
I thank you too because you didn't want to shut down my dream because when you saw what I was going through and I was telling you what I was want to do, you said you just give me more hope. I did not trying to give up on it, but I did not trying to look, you know, because in certain way when time some people going through some things and there are some people on them and you say something to them and they look for their looks, they kind of just make it defeat your purpose. But you didn't. You just give me still. You give me hope, and you give me hope, and I say, okay, we gotta do it.
Yeah, and that's what you did, man.
Yes.
And you going into the Hall of Fame, that's the blessing and the reward from being WBA light heavyweight champion of the world, and training hard and all the things you've done as an amateur and this here, and I'm so proud of you, bro. I don't know
Thank
what
you,
to say. You know, it's hard work and dedication for one reason, but
yes.
You're there now.
Yes, sir, I'm here. I'm here. Can I believe it? It's I'm here.
And uh-huh.
I gotta give it up to my right now. My wife is like my only family I have at the moment. Right now, is like my wife. Family is my family.
Mm-hmm.
My brother is in for a lot of days, and my cousin who brought me into boxing. When I told him I had a dream to be a boxer, and he was working, he was boxing at a Dreamscape Villa. His name is Paul Hillman. You know, he's great, great guy. And I tell you, man, and God put some good people in front of me to get to where I'm get right now, and I'm blessed, and I'm thank God for it.
Yeah, man. So what can we expect, you know, from Richard Hall? You training any fighters, managing the fighters, commentating or anything? What are you doing in boxing now?
Right now in boxing, I just met this young 17-year-old kid trying to see where he could get from there. One is 17. There's two brothers. One is 17, one is 15. And I haven't taken them to a in the gym yet. I'm just go to their house and just every day. Most of the time, I go to their house and I put up my heavy bag in the garage. You know, make them learn to can punch it. So I'm trying to find a gym because I'm in Atlanta, and because I do industrial painting at the moment, I don't really have full time where I could just go every day to put my full effort into it. It's just so when I get off work, I put my effort into and I can. Get a facility, a training facility where I could really put all my energy into it, you know, because I wanna help out, you know. Some people helped me when I was young, and I wanna give back. I want to pay back. I want to pay it back.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about, man. You reach one, you teach one, and you keep it going. You know, you just don't let the knowledge that you obtain, you just don't let it go away, and you go out, and when you need help, you help somebody, and you'll always be helped. You know, that's the blessings of the sport of boxing. You can start from humble beginnings and then have fortune and fame and rise to the level of being a champion. And once a champ,
always a champ.
There you go.
Always a champ. Always a champ. And I want to give a respect to my wife, Bonnie Brooks. She's a rock in my corner at the moment, even though she didn't meet me when I was boxing. But right now, she met me one time. I'm out of boxing for a little bit, and she turned out to be one of the greatest ladies I have right now in my corner.
Wow. Hey, like Bob Murray, any questions for Richard Hall?
Just basically, you know, one of the fights when you first came over here, you know, from Jamaica to Florida, how long was that training and the adjustment period before you actually got back into a ring then? You know, was it a long
one month?
Only? Wow, okay.
When I got over here from Jamaica, I got off a plane and I drove to a place called Winterhaven, Florida. And I got there, and right when I got there, there was a fighter named Ian Garrett. I think he was the NABF junior middleweight champion at the time. And that guy hit me so hard the first day. I just got off the plane and I boxed the guy. I was an amateur and this guy is a professional. And that guy hit me so hard, I went back to the hotel. And I decided, I said to myself, I'm going back to Jamaica. I'm not going to be here no more. And I stayed in the hotel and the night, and I started listening to all, you know, all the feedback where everybody like was telling me, because now I'm by myself and I'm in pain. I could hear all the negative people them saying, oh, you're not going to be this, you're not going to be nothing, you're not going to make it. And I started listening, and I started hearing, it's like it started giving me fuel,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know where to run to. All I know was the way where I drove in the car the evening. So I run in the morning and come back to the other, and I sit down and wait it. And they come pick me up, and the next we go back to the gym, and we box again.
Yeah, this guy's going to be a real champion. let's see. We have our boxing historian, Henry Hathcup, on the air right now before he does Willie Pep. Any questions for Richard Hall, Henry?
Not really. I was just listening to, the segment with Richard. I mean, that story about them chicken pox, that was hilarious. You know, I don't know how, you know, and Aaron, if you ever, you know, stop, you know, doing the stuff of boxing, you could be a good imitator. Well, you got that Richard Hall accent down, you know, to a T, and I love the way he talks. I mean, you know, he probably says, what accent? We're the ones that have the accent, right? But, you know, he fought some of the best of his day. I mean, Roy Jones Jr., I mean, my God, and the other guys, I mean, he's truly deserving to go into the Florida, you know, Boxing Hall of Fame. The only thing is it's going to be the same weekend as the Atlantic City Hall of Fame. And, you know, but, you know, with that saying, you know, Florida has, you know, had a lot of, you know, great things happening in there. And I remember when they first started many years ago, they contacted me and, you know, I gave them some advice how to start. And they're doing a terrific job, especially, you know, putting guys in like Richard. So, you know, my hat's off to them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, Richard, before we close with you, do you have any final questions?
I missed that. Hello?
What final words do you have for the fans?
Right now, I'm not finished yet. I'm just recovering. This is my second part come back because I have a book. I have a book where my cousin is also an author. He's doing my book right now, and it's called From a Pawn from a pawn to a king. If anybody understand about chess, you know, the little pawn where nobody give up, where nobody believes gonna make it, can become anything he want to become. And
yeah.
So that's the title and name of my book.
All right, Richard the Destroyer Hall, former WBA light heavyweight champion of the world and 2019 Florida Boxing Hall of Fame inductee, man. Thank you for coming on the World Boxing Review, Richard.
And thank you guys for inviting me on. I really appreciate it. Thank God. Amen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Yeah,
right.
But before we get to Willie Pep, man, and that's a true story. In the fight, Henry and Bob, when Richard would get hit, the scabs and stuff were literally coming off his body.
Oh, God.
And Larry Merchant and them are talking, well, the referee stopped this fight and asked the ref, well, he keeps coming back or trying something after, you know, this and that. He said, I couldn't stop it. And me and Larry Merchant got into it. He said, how come you didn't stop this fight? I said, look. He told me in training, he said, if you stop this fight, I kill you. He said, I kill you. So when a man says that with that fortitude, Henry, you let him fight to the finish. Because Richard can punch now. Ain't no question he can punch. So he had a puncher's chance in the fight, and I was going to let it go if he could have delivered that puncher's chance, man. And that's true. So, yeah, we're cutting. Yeah, it's cutting into your time, but
no, that's all right. That's all right.
Well, Willie Pep, man, what a great mover, what a great boxer. You know, you think of Muhammad Ali, Roy Jones, and them, but Willie Pep, Henry, he could really stick and move. Let's hear something about Willie Pep.
Well, Willie Pep, he was known as the Will of the Wisp. You know, he was born in 1922. He got started in boxing in 1937. And, you know, he's boxing amateur, and, you know, his mother really didn't like it. But at that time, he was boxing in Connecticut. That's where he was from. And they used to pay the amateur boxers at the time, you know, a few dollars here and there. And when his father found out, his father was only making $15 a week. And, you know, Willie was bringing home some money on every Friday for boxing. And he told Willie, he says, well, do they have boxing on Tuesdays too? You know, so he was, you know, so his father was all gung-ho, you know, as far as the boxing career goes. And I think he had like 65 amateur fights. He only lost three. It was one time in Connecticut. He was in a dressing room, and he looked at this tall drink of water. And he says, who's going to fight that guy? I mean, he's huge. And he says, well, you are. He said, what do you mean I am? He says, yeah. He said, the guy's a head taller than me. He says, yeah, I know, but he's going to fight him. He said, what's his name? He says, Ray Robertson. And that was Sugar Ray Robertson. And they actually had an amateur fight back in the 1930s. So, but he only lost, like I said, three amateur fights. And then he turned pro. I think he was like 17 years old when he turned pro, and you know, he started his career in 1940, you know, as a pro, and he won his first. He put a winning streak on, and then in his he was 42-0, and then he fought a guy by the name of Joey Archibald, who was a former world champion, and when he beat him, he became a world-rated fighter, and he was only 19 years old at the time. You know, he was in the featherweight division, a well-rated fighter. And then he started upping his game. He fought his first top 10 contender as Pedro Hernandez in August of 1942, and he beat him. And then he beat a few other guys. And then at the end of 1942, he challenged Corky Wright. That was November 20th, 1942, in New York. And, you know, he beat Corky Wright and became the featherweight champion of the world at the age of 20. And then he kept on fighting. He beat guys like Ali Stoltz. Ali Stoltz was one of the top lightweights in the world at the time. He beat him. And then he had a record of 62-0. And then he fought former and future lightweight champion of the world, Sammy Angott. The fight was supposed to, you know, they wanted it to be like 15 rounds, but they decided 10 was enough. But that was a mistake, really, because, you know, as Pep was, you know, he got off to a slow start. And, you know, Angott built up some points. By the time the 10th round came along, you know, Angott had the edge. I mean, two of the judges had him ahead 5-4 with one even. So he didn't lose by much. But if it was a 15-round fight, most observers would have said that, you know, Pep would have beat him. But that was his first defeat. You know, after 60, he was 62-0 at that time. And, but then, like 10 days later, he was back in the ring and beating another guy. And he kept on, you know, winning. And in 1944, I mean, he went against, I believe it was 8 world contenders, including Corky Wright a couple of times, and Lulu Constantino, Manuel Gonzalez, and Willie Joyce. And he beat them all. Willie Joyce he beat Ike Williams 3 times within like a couple-month period. So he was one of the best boxers, you know, pure boxers around. But, you know, Willie, he beat him. In 1945, Willie was voted the Fighter of the Year, you know, by Ring Magazine and stuff. But then 1946 came along. He continued his winning streak. You know, he didn't lose nothing. I mean, he had over 100 fights now, and, you know, he only lost that one. And then in July 25th, 1946, he fought a guy by the name of Jackie Graves. Now, they claim that Willie won a round without even throwing without even landing a punch, and that was supposed to be the fight against Jackie Graves. But you know, the thing was that was like a myth. But Willie, he used to carry around this article saying, you know, this is true and everything like this, and a lot of people, you know, thought that he actually wrote that article, you know, but, you know, people swear that happened, but if you look at the papers, and, you know, it was supposed to be in the third round, and I got a hold of the papers, you know, in the third round, they says there was so many punches in that round, you couldn't count them with a counter, you know, a clicker,
right.
You know, but it was a good story, you know what I mean? But the thing is that people believed it because he was such an outstanding defensive fighter. No, you know, I mean, he was like, he didn't really get hit. You know what I mean? He was such a, you know, his legs and his movement. I mean, if you watch him on film, I mean, he was unbelievable boxer. You know, that's why they call him the Will of the Wisp. And then he beat Corky Wright again late in 1946. But then early in 1947, January, he was involved in a plane crash. The co-pilot died. A few of the passengers died. He survived. And when the rescue people went over there, you know, one of them recognized him. And he says, you know who that is? That's the featherweight champion of the world, Willie Pep. And he says, well, he ain't going to fight again. You know, I don't even know if he's going to live. Well, you know, yeah, I think he had a broken leg, a broken back. They put him in a cast. But believe it or not, you know, a couple of months later, he was out of that. And I believe it was in June. This is only 5 months after the crash. He was back in the ring again. You know, because he wasn't going to go against anybody too good. You know, he just wanted to, you know, see what he got. But he had most of his stuff back. And he continued to win again. You know, he would beat Jock Leslie, one of the guys. And Jock Leslie is the only guy ever to knock out Sandy Sadler. And then he kept on, you know, winning. He beat Patty DeMarco a couple of times. But then in 1948, in October, you know, he ran against another tall drink of water by the name of Sandy Sadler. And, you know, Sadler kind of stopped his streak at that time. I mean, Sadler's Willie Pep's record at that time was 134 wins, one loss, and one draw. I mean, you know, imagine that.
Wow.
I mean, you know, people.
Those fights became the classics with him Sadler.
Four times. He got stopped. You know, kind of underestimated him, and then. I believe that was in October of 1948, and that's when I was born, October 48. But in February, he had a return match with Sandy Sadler, and it's probably one of the greatest exhibitions, you know, of all time. In fact, Willie Pep, we said it was his greatest moment when he actually outboxed Sandy Sadler over 15 rounds and won. You know, most of the people thought he won like 10 of the 15 rounds, and he became once again, you know, the featherweight champion of the world. And then, you know, he defended his title several more times, and, you know, he fought a lot, you know, even non-title bouts. But then he fought again against Sandy Sadler in 1950 in September, and he got stopped there only because his shoulder went out. That's what they claimed anyway. In the corner, you know, he couldn't go on, and he was actually ahead on the scorecards on that fight. But you know, his shoulder went out, and you know, he kind of had to call it quits. And then he had another fight, of course, with Sandy Sadler, and that was probably one of the most dirtiest fights, you know, on record. You know. They were, you know, hitting low, hitting behind the head. They were wrestling on the floor. In fact, it was voted as one of the most dirtiest fights there ever was. And again, Pep was actually winning the fight when he got stopped again in the ninth round. From there, you know, it was more down, you know, more or less downhill. I mean, he would lose to Tommy Collins. Then there was a fight in 1954 against Lulu Perez. And, you know, most people feel that, you know, Willie Pep took a dive on that fight. It was only in the second round. I mean, I don't know how true it is, but, you know, he continued to fight all the way into the late 1950s. He would lose to Hogan Kid Bassey. Then in 1959, he would lose another fight, but didn't fight for another 6 years. And then he made a comeback. You know, he was well into the 40s at the time. I think he was like 43 years old, 42, 43 years old, and he had a number of fights there. And he won them all except for the last one. And then when he retired, he won 229 fights. He lost 11 with one draw. He was also married 6 times. And I remember meeting him years ago, and he says, yeah, he says, all my wives, though, they were good housekeepers. And I was like, oh, good housekeeper. Yeah. Every time I got a divorce, they kept the house, you know. So.
Yeah, that's a good one. But he was very, very crafty and very funny like that. I remember meeting him in Deer Lake. He had came up to Deer Lake one Sunday afternoon. Up to Ollie's camp.
Yeah.
And he spent the day up there. And, you know, they had rocks and stuff with his name on it. You know, Ollie had, you know, big giant rocks with all these great fighters' names on it. And his name was on there. And he like, yeah, you see that, my rock. That's what he said. See my rock. See my rock.
Yeah.
And he looked at that thing, and he sat on that rock, too, for a long time, man. And people that were up there that day just would come there and talk and, you know, to him. He was a very, very crafty, witty guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I seen him on, you know, on some of the interviews he gave. He even was he interviewed Sandy Sadler once, and, you know, it was very comical, and because he asked Sandy Sadler, who's the toughest guy you ever, ever met, and he whispers, "Tell him it's me. Tell him it's me." You know. So he was quite a character. When people rate the top fighters of all time, you know, Willie Pep's always in the top 10 in most people's mind, top featherweight. You know, they say, "Well, Sandy Sadler beat him 3 out of 4 times." I said, "But he beat guys that Sandy Sadler lost to." You know what I mean? You can't just go by, you know. And like I said, in a third fight, maybe, I don't know, about his shoulder, but he was ahead of that fight, and he was also ahead in the fourth fight. So, he has to be going down.
That age of television with Willie Pep and Stanley Sadler, they fought on TV on that new platform that they had. Them two fought on TV a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, they were very popular. Like, both of them. I mean, you know, one guy can knock a wall down. The other guy, you couldn't catch. I mean, you know, like I said, Willie Pep was a dancing master. He's probably known as the best pure boxer, you know, that ever went to the ring. I mean, he's just he was just that good, and everybody wanted to see him. You know, I mean, uh-huh. even you know, when he made his comeback in the 1960s, you know, and this is like 7 years after he fought, or six, 7 years after he fought, and people still wanted to see the guy. I mean, you know, he was that good, and you know, later on, you know, he would go around and, you know, make his rounds to the veteran boxing organizations. Like, that's where I met him, and you know, he was a fun guy to talk to, a lot of knowledge, and you know, he became a referee, later on, and he was pretty good. I mean, as far as that goes, he fought 60 different opponents that were rated in the top 10 at one time, 89 times, you know. So, you know, he fought a lot. You know, over 240 times, and I know, you know, if you look at his record, a lot of them were called tomato cans. But the thing is, that was the thing back then. I mean, you know, you didn't make $1 million a fight, so you fought like, you know, a couple times a month. You know, it didn't matter who you fight, and all styles. And sometimes the guys that are just up and coming, they're the most dangerous because, you know, they don't have any style. They just, you know, swing away and, you know, one punch away. So he, like I said, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, you know, several Hall of Fame in Connecticut and International Hall of Fame and Ring Hall of Fame in 1963. I mean, he was even elected into the Florida Hall of Fame, and I think it's 2010. So, and he was voted the greatest featherweight champion of all time, by just about everybody, including the ring in 1994 and 2002, and of course the Ibro voted him also as the greatest, and the United Press voted him as the greatest featherweight of the century and the fifth greatest boxer of all time. I mean, you know, accolades just keep on going on and on. Of course, he at the end of his career, he suffered from Alzheimer's disease, and you know, he died in 2006. So, you know, but you know, that's the bad part of boxing. You know, 241 fights. That's a lot of fights. I mean, there's only a few people in the world that had more wins than he did, and I think he has the most wins as a champion. A couple of guys had more wins than him during their career, but they weren't champions, you know. But he was a world champion, and you know, there was only one Willie Pep. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, let's bring Willie Pep up to date. You know, let's look at, since Manny Pacquiao's fight tonight. Manny Pacquiao against Willie Pep, featherweight, when Pacquiao was a featherweight.
Wow, that's something. I know they had an article not too long ago, well, quite a while ago, about Alexis Arguello and Willie Pep, and they mm-hmm. said Willie Pep would have beat him. You know, Willie Pep, you know, now you got to reduce Manny back down to featherweight, you know. And you know, I think it would have been a really, really good fight because both, you know, Manny had more punch, more sock to his punch. But, you know, Willie was more of a defensive fighter, too. I mean, he wouldn't let you get hit. You know, he used to say all these punches that knock the heck out of you. And he says, yeah, but they got to hit you first. And it would have been really, I mean, Manny Pacquiao.
And the way
he
moved. You know, they talk about Mayweather's movement in the ring. And the reason why I bring that up, they talk about the way Mayweather boxes and moves. But I believe a lot of them, if they looked at Willie Pep, he was just awesome.
Oh yeah,
the way
the guy that a lot of people compare him with, as far as the modern guys go, was somebody like Pennell Whitaker. The only thing is, Pennell Whitaker was a southpaw. But thing is that Whitaker was a great defensive fighter, you know, and he would make you look foolish, and you couldn't hit him, and he didn't have that big punch. And you know, I mean, you know, they were both in, you know, the same type of fighter. I mean, it's just, you know, when you're looking at the most defensive fighters, the best defense, you know, you have to put down Willie Pep, Whitaker, and probably Mayweather, you know, up there.
That's
right. As far, you know, I mean, these guys, you know, they just, you know, knew how to fight. You know, the old saying is hit and don't get hit. I mean, you know, sometimes you think it's a boring fight, but the real purists of boxing, they love that stuff. You know, look at this guy.
Yeah.
You know, you miss and miss. I mean, you know, you can – it's too bad, you know, there isn't more films on Willie Pep, but you can go on YouTube and find enough that you'll see his style.
Right.
And,
his style,
you know, the way he was – you know, the way he crashed down a couple of times or the way he just ignored punches or – Yeah, you think he got him in the corner, and all of a sudden you're in the corner. You know, he just flips you right around by doing just little things, you know. So, like I said,
I heard him say to a guy one day when he was there, the guy said, well, he says, what's the best way to get away from a punch? He say, duck.
Yeah, we had these he had these one liners. He was that way even when I met him. He was just joking, you know, he was more of a comedy guy than anything else, but you know, like I said, he held a featherweight title, you know, two separate occasions, and you know, there was first 62 bouts in a row, and you know, as far as that goes, and he was, you know, after 136 fights, you know, he only lost one. And I think that plane crash, you know, of course, if you break your back or break your leg, and you know, you're not gonna be, you know, something's gonna go out of you, you know.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
You know, if that didn't happen, I was just wondering if you know, Sadler would have beat him in that first fight. Because he's a different fighter, you know. You know,
we got 90 seconds, Henry. 90 seconds. Close it up for us.
Well, like I said, when you rate the greatest fighters, you know, in history, you know, you say the greatest heavyweights and the greatest lightweights. When it comes to the greatest featherweights, I don't think there's anyone better than Willie Pep. I mean, you know, you have them, you know, like Manny Pacquiao, and you have even Henry Armstrong. He came up more or less as a featherweight, but you know, he went up, you know, in class. But you know, Willie Pep was a dancing master. He hardly ever got hit back then, and when he did, you know, you didn't hit him twice. You didn't hit him with them combination punches because his head, you know, was never there to hit. And he just maneuvered every fighter in the position that he wanted them to. And you were fighting his fight, not their fight. And, you know, he was just a marvel to watch. And if anybody, you know, never saw Willie Pep, just go on YouTube and just put down Willie Pep YouTube, and you know, you'll
okay.
see a lot of good stuff.
All right, look, we got 10 seconds, Bob.
We're good. 10 seconds.
Yeah, we're good. Well, I'd like to thank you for tuning in and our special guest, Richard the Destroyer Hall, for being inducted into the Florida Boxing Hall of Fame. But I'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions and world famous radio aficionado Bob Murray, and our Hall of Fame boxing historian, Henry Haskop. He's going in Atlantic City to 2019 in Atlantic City,
yes.
Boxing Hall of Man. Thank you for tuning in to the
Thank
World
you.
Boxing
yes.
Review.
Thank you.
Week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you.